Will America ever get enough of Richard Nixon? This week, a movie titled The Assassination of Richard Nixon opened in limited release. It stars Sean Penn as Sam Bick, a tire salesman and would-be assassin who, in 1974, plotted to crash a plane into the White House. Ironically, Richard Nixon loved the movies. He loved them so much that he screened more than 500 movies during his 5 years in office. These were movies he watched in the comfort of a private screening room, long before the advent of video and DVD. In Mark Feeney's new book called Nixon at the Movies, he examines President Nixon's movie-watching habits, and Mark Feeney joins us from WBUR in Boston. Thanks very much, Mark.
Thank you, Jackie.
You know, as I was looking through this and thinking about all the movies that Nixon watched, I still was struck by the number, 500. I mean, that's a lot to get in.
That is a lot to get in. Part of it is simply structural, though, in that if you're the leader of the free world, you can't just head out at night if you want to take a break. But perhaps the most interesting aspect of his presidential movie going is how much it rose during Watergate. Like most of us, I guess, who go to the movies, escapism was part of the appeal. And as things got worse, he went to the movies a lot more often than he did earlier in his presidency.
Let's talk, Mark, about Richard Nixon's favorite directors. Now, I wasn't surprised that he loved Westerns. I mean, he grew up with the genre. Or that he loved John Ford. I was surprised to read that he screened something like 56 of them.
He screened 56 Westerns, but only 20 films by Ford, which is still twice as many as by any other director.
Stagecoach,
yes,
was a landmark Western that Ford made that Nixon loved. Made in 1939, early in Ford's career, it stars John Wayne as the sharpshooter Ringo Kidd, and this whole motley cast of characters gets into the Stagecoach. Just a wonderful, wonderful collection, from the Whiskey Drover to the Sodden Doctor to the Fallen Woman. They're all making their way across the plains in a stagecoach, dodging danger.
So you're the notorious Ringo Kidd.
My friends just call me Ringo. Nickname I had as a kid.
Seems to me I knew your family, Henry. Didn't I fix your arm once when you were... bucked off a horse.
Are you Doc Boone?
I certainly am.
That was my kid brother broke his arm. You did a good job, Doc, even if you was drunk.
Thank you, son. Professional compliments are always pleasing.
Yes, they are.
What happened to that boy whose arm I fixed?
He was murdered.
What did he love about John Ford?
If you look closely at Ford's movies, again and again, you find that the consistent theme, whether you're dealing with Westerns or military movies or contemporary films such as Grapes of Wrath, are about community. In Nixon, he was such a lonely and isolated person. And in the movies, of course, you can be lonely and isolated and not feel the pressure of that. Nixon, so far as I know, never saw a movie alone. And one time at Camp David, he saw a movie with H.R. Haldeman's secretary. Just, you can imagine him seeking out someone so he would have company. Once at Camp David, he saw a film with J. Edgar Hoover and Clyde Tolson. And he would also often let...
Who appear, of course, in Oliver Stone's Nixon.
Yes.
Let's talk about the movie Double Indemnity, Billy Wilder's classic noir starring Fred McMurray as the morally compromised and oh-so-attractive insurance agent Walter Neff. And you write about the similarities between Mr. Nixon and Walter Neff.
Partly it's superficial in the most obvious sense. They look alike, the receding hairline, the cleft chin, the long face. But much more important than that, if you look at Nixon... in at the time of the film, the late 30s, early 40s. He's a young lawyer in Southern California. He is doing his best to beat the bushes to make business for the small firm he works for. He does divorce cases. Walter Neff is a go-getter insurance salesman, doing his best to beat up business belonging to various clubs and so forth. And both of them embody the kind of ethic of Southern California, especially of that time, a kind of rootlessness.
Let's listen to Where It All Comes Apart. It's this tense, dramatic scene. McMurray is speaking into the dictaphone at the end of the film. And
yes, exactly. Yes, taping.
And of course, he's wounded, isolated, and he's addressing his confession to his boss, Keyes, who's played by Edward G. Robinson.
That was the longest night I ever lived through, Keyes. And the next day was worse when the story broke in the papers. They started talking about it at the office. And the day after that, when you started digging into it, I kept my hands in my pockets because I thought they were shaking. I tried to hold myself together, but I could feel my nerves pulling me to pieces.
Do you make any correspondence between this kind of meltdown and Richard Nixon's emotional fraying?
I think that that's would be a little reductive to do that. But I would say that it seems to me the most extraordinary aspect of Watergate is that after the April 30th, 1973 speech, when he announced the resignation of Haldeman and another top aide, John Ehrlichman, and the firing of the White House counsel, John Dean, he said to Ron Ziegler, his press secretary, "You know it's all over, Ron." And that was 16 months before he resigned. And for 16 months, he knew that there was no way out. Hmm. He made himself into the ultimate noir character, you know, aware of his own doom.
It's well known, of course, that Nixon was a big fan of the movie Patton, the 1970 film that depicts the life of General George Patton, who was known as Old Blood and Guts. Patton led the Third Army sweep across Europe during World War II that ended at the Battle of the Bulge. What did Nixon admire about the real Patton?
He loved the figure of Patton, his dash, his swagger, the way in which he broke all the rules. You know, Nixon, there's this odd duality within him in that in so many ways he is always trying to do the right thing and present himself as the model citizen, but he loved seeing himself as this kind of loner and free agent.
Well, and he's watching this during the secret invasion of Cambodia.
Well, he watches it before, and then he watches it twice after, and during the two subsequent viewings, he makes sure that a number of his aides, such as Kissinger and John Mitchell, the Attorney General, join him so that they too can feel the kind of inspiration. One other point, though, to make about Patton and Nixon's obvious response to it, it's one of the few movies that he had screened more than once. It was Gary Wills who first pointed this out. If you look at the film closely, obviously Patton is the great hero, but the villain, it's someone we never see in the movie, but we often hear mentioned, Dwight D. Eisenhower, who keeps bedeviling Patton. And if you know anything about Richard Nixon's career, you know that he had an extremely complicated and often bedeviled relationship with the man he served as vice president, mm-hmm. Dwight D. Eisenhower.
Let's listen to George C. Scott as General Patton in the opening scene.
All this stuff you've heard about America not wanting to fight, wanting to stay out of the war, is a lot of horse dung. Americans play to win all the time. I wouldn't give a hoot in hell for a man who lost and laughed. That's why Americans have never lost and will never lose a war.
It is so tempting to think of what must have been going through Nixon's mind because, of course, he didn't want to be the first president to lose a war. He said that.
And here is this decisive, intensely masculine figure just letting rip.
Near the end of his presidency, he was actually able to meet John Ford at
Yes, I suspect that it had to have been among the great moments in Nixon's life. It was end of March 73. What it was that the American Film Institute was presenting its first Lifetime Achievement Award, and the choice was John Ford. And they asked Nixon to come and do the presentation, and he agreed. Nixon's on the stage standing next to John Ford, and John Ford says, "I reached for my rosary, and I uttered a short, fervent prayer, not an original prayer, but one spoken in millions of American homes today. It is a simple prayer, simply, God bless Richard Nixon." And then on the videotape of the presentation, you see Nixon. It's actually very moving. Nixon and Charlton Heston, who was the president of AFI, coming up, and each of them takes Ford's shoulder. He's very ill at this time and infirm, and help him off the stage.
Mark Feeney's book is called Nixon at the Movies. He's a reporter and reviewer at the Boston Globe, and he joined us from member station WBUR. Mark Feeney, thank you very much.
Jackie, thank you.
Finally, we leave you with Richard Nixon himself from an appearance he made on The Tonight Show just before throwing his hat into the 1968 race. Mr. Nixon said Johnny Carson had the screen presence to be president of the United States.
"I'm an expert on how to run for president. Not how to win, but how to run."
"Yes, you are that."
"You're young, 42, right?"
"Right."
You come over on television like gangbusters?" And boy, I'm the expert on how important that is.
You're not going to lend me your makeup man, are you?
No, I'm going to lend him to Lyndon Johnson.